Hello, and welcome to this episode of Passionate About People. My name is Phil Dave. I'm a broadcaster who works in a number of different subjects, from mental health and well-being to technology.
Hello, I'm Graham Godfrey. At the heart of everything I do, I'm an entrepreneur. I love building businesses, and I love coaching entrepreneurs to build businesses. After successfully building and selling my own company, I specialize in business mentoring and mindset shifting to create success in people's lives. As you know by now, I have my own radio show on secondcityradio.net, and I'm passionate about people, life, and helping people to succeed.
And if you don't mind me saying, I think it takes a true broadcaster and someone who is utterly brave to be daring enough to say mindset shifting on a podcast recording. Good work. We are joined on this episode by Graham Goodkind.
I'm not going to try and shift anyone's mindset, because I think that's too much of a push for me to try and do on my debut on this podcast. I'm founder and chairman of Frank PR, which is one of the UK's leading consumer PR consultancies. I set it up in September 2000 and still going really strong today. I do that 3 days a week. With the other 2 days a week, I advise other marketing services companies and agencies in the similar sort of space on how to grow their businesses and hopefully achieve the same sort of levels of success as Frank does. And with a bit of spare time that I have, I like to try and hit the golf course or the paddle court, which is something I know Graham, the other Graham on this podcast, is very fond of.
Now, do you know, there's one thing that springs to mind straight away with you two, not least of all, that I think you are utterly cruel putting me on a program with two people with the name of Graham and surname beginning with G. Thank you both very much indeed. But I can't help but observe that both of you in your professional careers are used when it comes to advice in certain scenarios. So I'm thinking that sort of advice is the name of the game. And I wonder what qualifies someone for giving advice. Do you think one just has to have the confidence to be able to give advice, or do you think that a certain degree of knowledge is required before one can call themselves an advisor?
Personally, yes. I mean, I guess I give two types of advice. One is in the PR sphere to clients of Frank. I give them advice on their messaging, their campaigns, you know, a lot of the time coming up with ideas to get their brand or their purpose or their organization across to predominantly consumers. So that's, you know, in a B2C environment, and you need to know what you're talking about to be able to give advice and have experience to do that. You know, with my other hat on, where I'm advising other businesses, I think there's a bit of you need to have been there, seen it, and done it to be able to help other people hopefully go in that direction. So, you know, I don't think you can just become an advisor overnight, or maybe you can be, but certainly the certain advice that I give to people, there needs to be a bit of qualification by experience, not by qualifications, if you like, but by experience that you need to have.
But Graham Godfrey, what I'm getting at is that, and I say this with respect to both of you, because I know you individually, and it was sheer dumb luck that we all came together under one podcast, but I know your abilities. I know that what I would turn to both of you for, respectively, for advice on, but what qualifies someone to give that advice? I'm just wondering what the barometer is, how one would know who to turn to in a situation for advice.
In the main, if somebody's going to come to you for advice, it's normally going to be through a recommendation. It's normally going to be through somebody that they know that you may have helped. Look, I've been in business for 35 years. In fact, I met Graham probably 35 years ago because he played in a football team in a Sunday league called BC Reds. And I sponsored the football team, and I had general portfolio. There's lots of general portfolio names all over the football pitch. So that was my first experience at selling. So I think to be a business advisor, a good one, you've got to have been in business. You've got to have experienced, I call it business anxiety. You've got to have experienced failure. You've got to experience risk, things going right, things going wrong. And actually feel your way through that world of business. Once you've been there and you've done it, and look, Graham and I, we've both built a business and sold it. In fact, I think you've just bought your business back that you sold. Once you've got that experience, you actually realize you know a lot more than you think you do. And if you've then got an opportunity to help others grow their businesses and grow their companies and take them on that journey, there's nothing more fulfilling.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about advice is it's just that. And the thing I learned from one of my early bosses, a lady called Lynn Franks, where I sort of cut my teeth in the world of PR, was that it was an amazing woman in many ways. And she used to advise lots of people. And some of the stuff she used to come up with was like, I couldn't believe what she was coming up with. It was visionary. It was predicting things that were going to be happening 10 years in the future. And then I just thought, well, she was confident. She had a view. And the point about advice is there's no right or there's no wrong. And you've just got to have the confidence yourself to be able to give it. Obviously, you've got to believe that the advice that you're giving is correct or true. But until someone's actually acted on that advice, you don't know whether it's the right advice or the wrong advice. But you just have to have the confidence to meet it. And she would make all these wild predictions. Clients would either think she was completely mad or they would lap it up, all of it. I mean, some of her advice was a bit far-fetched, but the fact is she had the balls to be able to talk about it, be the balls to be able to give it, and she did it from an informed point of view. And let me tell you, more often than not, she was right. And I think if you've got the confidence to do it, more often than not, you can be right as well.
So do you think that her vision of looking into the future of what she wanted to achieve, how did that affect or inspire you, Graham, to sort of build Frank PR or to get into business and build something special?
Well, funnily enough, my experience of that agency and Lynn Franks was, as I said, a very visionary. It was her husband, actually, who used to run the business side of the agency. And I love both bits. So when I fell into PR, the things that I loved were the creative and the ideas and coming up with campaigns and conjuring stuff out of nothing. And I used to love the business and trying to make money out of it, maybe because I'm the kind of good Jewish boy in me. That was the bit that I liked, the creative and the commercial, which was an unusual mix. And I guess what I learned from Lynn Franks from a creative point of view was how to do it creatively. From a commercial point of view, how not to do it commercially, because the business wasn't a particularly brilliantly run business, but was a massive hot shop when it came to the coolest, hottest agency out there. So I think sometimes you can learn more about what not to do than what to do in certain circumstances. And I guess where I cut my teeth, that's what I did. And I kind of always thought I wanted to set up my own agency one day. And I was one of these, you know, you hear the story of a footballer that ends up becoming a coach or a manager. They're sort of just observing little bits and thinking, oh, I'd like to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'd like to do that. You know, they're sort of forming their own shape of something, what they can do by learning off other people. That's definitely what I was doing. That gave me the confidence to do it myself eventually in 2000.
But there was a word that you've used a couple of times throughout what you've just said that was sort of what I was alluding to a little earlier on. You mentioned the word confidence. I wonder how much confidence plays a part in someone who dishes out advice to someone. Because if I think it from my perspective, I don't advise businesses, never have done, never will do, because it's not my shtick, it's not my thing at all. But what I do is I advise when it comes to putting radio programming together. Now, whether that's stuff that goes out live on radio, whether it's podcasts like this, it's just the way I work. It's what I do. I look at a program and I think about how it can be improved and make it sound more enjoyable for the listeners. And the way that I've managed to do that is that I've built the confidence to turn to others and say, actually, no, do you know what? That doesn't sound very good. It would sound so much better if you did this. Some people look at me with abject horror, as if, how dare I have the audacity to turn around to them and denigrate their hard work. But actually, it comes from a place of caring. It comes from a place of wanting whoever I'm working with to succeed and to be the best that they can. And I guess thinking about it, it's probably exactly the same in the business world. What you say to one of your clients when you're advising them is not because you're trying to denigrate them or put them down, but actually, on the contrary, you maybe like what they do. You maybe like the money even more, I don't know, but you maybe like what they do and you want to see that succeed.
Yeah, look, and there's a way of saying it and there's a way of communicating it that's got to be, you know, quite understanding of someone's situation, empathetic, considerate and all that. But you're right, that confidence, I think, shines through in terms of your voice and in terms of the way you do that. As you explain that, obviously, this is a podcast, so you can't see it, but you were actually quite expressive when you were saying about how you talk to, you know, your clients about how to construct a radio show or podcast. You know, you were passionate about it and I could feel it when you were talking. And I think sometimes maybe when I talk to clients with my Frank hat on about a communication issue they might have, or with my other hat on, which is, you know, just giving general business advice, I'm excited, I'm passionate, I'm wrapped up in it. And I think that comes across. So yes, I'm confident, I know my stuff, but I'm also passionate about it and excited about it. I'm almost like putting yourself in their shoes, which is a bit like what you were just doing, Phil, when you were talking about what you do for your clients.
And I suppose the other thing as well is compassion, because Graham Godfrey, one thing that I think one does need to be aware of, which I confess I'm not always aware of it, as sometimes I am a little bit blunt when I speak to folk. Compassion actually goes a long way, because then I suppose that actually lures the best out of people. If you're going to sort of be quite confrontational and almost maybe bully someone back into their shell to see your perspective and your point of view, that's not necessarily the best way to get the most out of someone, I would have thought.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. Look, I think, I mean, look, especially in the coaching world, you're not judging anyone. It's probably all there. And it's just a case of helping them to release what's inside to bring out the best in each person. I mean, Graham is a fascinating chap, because this Frank PR business, which has won, might be hundreds of awards. I'm not quite sure.
It probably is.
It probably is. And some of the things that you've done within that business, I'd like to hear more about some of the things that you've created in that business and some of the successes that you've had, because it really, it is one of the top PR agencies in the UK.
Yeah, you sound a bit surprised that I could have ever done that, Graham. From you're obviously trying to match up my football skills with my PR skills, and obviously the football skills weren't that good, and you kind of thought that might extend to my PR skills. Luckily, my PR skills are slightly better. I wasn't such a terrible footballer, but my PR skills are definitely better than my football skills, that's for sure.
Listen, you play paddle very well. And golf, so you're obviously very competitive, and you want to win.
Yeah, I think, funnily enough, that's what you talk about. I mean, being competitive and wanting to win. I think, yeah. I mean, anyone that knows me, even my kids, would say exactly the same. Is that I hate losing anything, and I just hate losing. I'll forget about it quite quickly if I have to, and if I do. And I think in business, you know, talking about what drives you and. Is that I just never want to lose whatever I'm doing. I've got a pitch later on this afternoon. I don't want to lose it. I'll be really upset if I lose it, and I'll blank that brand afterwards. I've kind of always had this habit that I used to do since I started Frank, as if we lost a pitch, it was kind of really bad, because we could never have that brand again. And I remember one of my first pitches that it really came to a head was we were pitching for HP Source not long into Frank's business. And HP Source is a staple of my foods intake. I mean, HP Source with lots of things. I thought, oh my God, if we lose this pitch, what am I going to do? I can't not have HP Source again. It's a disaster. Luckily, we won it. So it was okay. So I still play that game with myself. I just don't want to lose so much. Now, particularly if I'm deprived of ever having that brand or product or service ever again.
And I think I'm a great believer that a sign of just how passionate one is about what they do, the losing, as you call it, really, really hurts. There's no other way to describe it. It's just this overwhelming sense of feeling gutted, because it happened to me recently with it was less a pitch, let's say it's a program that I was going for, and it didn't pay off. I wasn't chosen to do said program, and it hurt. I'm not going to lie. I really remember I actually felt my mood drain, feeling really anxious, really grumpy about it, thinking, why? You know, why has this happened to me? And of course, think about it in hindsight. It wasn't the end of the world. I'm used to the word no. It happens in the industry I work in all the blooming time. But it still hurts. And I think that's a sign of someone really giving a hoot about what they do.
You know, I'm lucky I've played casual sport with ex-professional sports men. Mainly footballers, actually, to be honest, and on the golf course. And, like, they just, it's unbelievable. You're just playing a fun game, like, with your mates. They don't want to lose. Whatever you do, it's like in their, hardwired in them as a professional athlete or professional sportsman, this, whatever you do, you got to win. You mustn't lose, even if it's a fun. And I think you can learn a lot from that in business. It's a brilliant attitude to take through in business. Obviously, you're not going to win them all, so you've got to learn how to deal with it. So my principle is always never get too high on the highs, and then sometimes you won't get too low on the lows. So you've got to, take it on the chin sometimes, but you've got to have this passion and the desire to win, particularly when you're in a competitive business like the PR agency world, where you're pitching 2-3 times a week for business. I mean, you've really got to be at the top of the game in that respect.
Somebody said to me once, and it might have been when I was playing paddle, but they said to me, do you hate losing more than you enjoy winning? And I thought that's a difficult one to answer. And I do have a take on it where I'm slightly different to you two in that I don't, obviously we all love winning, but I don't hate losing. I actually see it as an opportunity to make winning slightly sweeter. And I use that very much in business. I see losing as a lesson every time I do it. I don't like it and I don't love it, but I don't see it as a barrier. I sort of know that I almost need to go down that road in order to get better.
If someone says, you know, there is that saying that it's not about win or lose, it's win or learn. That's kind of what someone did say. But, you know, you just reminded me as you're talking, and it was actually in this boardroom that I'm talking from now, the Frank boardroom. And I think you know this guy, Graham, Billy Schwer, who's a fellow sort of coach and boxer. And he came in and did a talk here at Frank many, many years ago. And it was a brilliant talk. And there's one thing I remember him talking about. He said that every time he went into that boxing ring, he would have rather died in that boxing ring than lost. You know, if he couldn't win, he'd rather have died than come out a loser. Luckily, he did, but it was that amazing. You say, no, surely you can't mean that. He wouldn't have rather died. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah, I would have rather died. He, that was what it meant to him. He just the desire to not lose. It was so massive, and you thought, wow, you know, here's a boxer talking that is right. You know, in that profession where you could obviously die, and he would. He looked you in the eye when he answered that question. You thought, wow, that is real competitive spirit. If ever you've seen it,
it's funny you mentioned Billy Schwer, because many years ago when I was started in the insurance business, Billy came to work with us for a while, and his nickname in that business, which was General Portfolio at the time, was the Fighting Financial Advisor. We got to meet a lot of boxers at that time, because obviously these were all the people that he knew. And they all had that absolute conviction, because stepping into the ring, you actually can die. I mean, mm-hmm. It's something that can happen to you. And it's a very, very difficult sport. And you're right. His conviction to win is second to none. I think actually before he won the world title, I think he lost it three times. And that was incredibly painful for him. But at the time, I used to follow him. And obviously, we're still friends now. And he's a fantastic coach, fantastic motivator. He's a really good guy. But he's had to change so many things in his life in order to be successful in his new life. In other words, when he came out from boxing, he couldn't use all the same attributes that were required to win in the ring. So that's been a real learning curve.
I guess the only question I've got, which I don't know, is back to you, is I don't know whether younger people today, your average sort of Gen Zer or millennial, has that same desire. I don't know. I find it common in certain people who are a bit older than my age. I'm not quite sure whether it's that exists so much today amongst younger generations. I don't know.
If I may speak as someone who is on the brink of millennial, apparently, I understand I'm sort of from the first wave of millennials, which I absolutely hate that expression, because it makes me sound like I go around hugging trees and other sorts of nonsense that I absolutely do not do, just to clarify. However, one thing I have observed is that people of my generation and younger seem to have much larger ambitions, but might I suggest more unrealistic ambitions. For example, they would like to see changes to the world rather than changes to their world. And I think that's the biggest difference. For me, I'm under no disillusion. Whatever I find abhorrent in the world, I find abhorrent. But I know, and don't have anyone write in and say, oh, with that attitude, you never change anything. I know, realistically, there are some things I just cannot change. It's not going to happen. So there's no point in me getting all het up about it and really angry with other people about it, because I'm not going to change that. But there are some things within my world that I can change. I can make sure that I'm a better person. I can make sure I'm a more ambitious person. It's things that mean something to me and ultimately could see some sort of result at the end of it for my world. And I think that's the biggest difference, is that for whatever ridiculous reason, that my generation and younger seem to be looking at far bigger pictures that they have no control over.
What I'm interested in is young people, they have a different attitude to us, and we probably had a different attitude to our parents, and so it goes on. In relation to the PR world, how has it changed over the last 20 years? What defining moments have there been?
I think It's a good question, Graham, and I think the answer is a lot and not a lot. I mean, the core things that make an idea from a creative point of view something we talk about with each other, we use, frankly, the word talkability. So coming up with ideas with talkability are essentially the same. They're just the methods that you do it are slightly different. And, you know, today, obviously, social media is very important. And when I started in PR, I was used to visualize, if I was trying to come up with an idea, I would think, okay, what would it look like if it was on the front page of The Sun? Because The Sun was the most popular newspaper. And if it was on the stories on the front page of The Sun, it was going to be something that everyone was going to be talking about, hence talkability. Now I think of a story about what's going to make a story that's going to be the top trending new story on Twitter, which is kind of a very different lens. So you've got to think socially first, or social media first, I think, when you're trying to come up with an idea from a PR point of view. But the things that go into a story, the things that make a story something you want to share with someone else, talk about around the water cooler, talk about down the pub when we can go down the pub after work, or a dinner party when we can have dinner parties again over the weekend, the ingredients of that are the same. Now there's an element of humor, an element of controversy, an element of reality, an element of sort of man bites dog as opposed to dog bites man, a bit of surprise, a bit of humanity, a bit of purpose. All those things that get us talking about a subject are the same. It's just how we communicate them to each other. That's the only bit that's changed. And if you keep in tune with that and up to date with that, then, you know, I don't think it's a problem, and that the industry hasn't changed a lot.
I think recently you had a great success with two loves of mine. Obviously, I love Weetabix and I love baked beans, but I don't particularly like baked beans and Weetabix together. Where did that all come from?
Good. Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, it's great that you talk about that, because in the history of Frank, that's probably, having been here since day one, that's probably our best ever campaign and our most successful campaign. And the insight came from, I guess, two sides. One, there was the brief from the client, Weetabix. Not much happens with the Weetabix. It's essentially the same sort of product as it has been since, I think it was 1932 when it was first invented or formulated. So you've always got to come up, being the PR agency, you've always got to come up with fun and creative ideas and creative ways to get Weetabix talked about. Otherwise, no one's going to talk about it. So you've got to come up with your hooks or angles. And their campaign has been about, for the last couple of years, about inventive ways of having Weetabix in a health conscious way, but all very obviously sensible suggestions. And it got us thinking about, if you had to combine different foods, what do you combine with? And kind of going back to something I talked about earlier about HP sauce, one of the annoying things about my wife, lovely but annoying, is that she likes combining, on a typical Saturday or Sunday morning, smoked salmon, which I really like and she really likes obviously, and she smothers it with HP sauce, which I really like, but not together. I mean, there's no way for me that smoked salmon and HP sauce work together. And I think when we started talking about it, lots of people have their own little unusual or quirky food combinations, which is where we stumbled across the idea of maybe we could come up with some unusual food combinations for Weetabix to get Weetabix talked about further. So we came up with a series of food combinations, one of which was Weetabix and baked beans. One of which was with Weetabix and innocent smoothies, which actually is probably a bit nicer. One of which is Weetabix and peanut butter. One of which was Weetabix and Marmite. So we did stuff officially with the brands, all these different brands, and we culminated it in our sequence of releasing these sort of stories on the same day with Weetabix and beans. So it was Weetabix and beans that got everyone. What? Okay, the other ones I can sort of guess that you might be able to do, but Weetabix, no way. And, you know, we sort of made our own luck, but, you know, all these brands then proceeded to pile on, whichever way you want to do it, on top of that, either saying how disgusting it was, how it was such a no-no, or, you know what, how about trying Weetabix with this, how to try with that. And by the end of the day, hey, you know, talk about coming up with a story that is the top trending story on Twitter. It was indeed the top trending story on Twitter in the country. And it had about 600 other brands that had piled into the story. I mean, some of the headlines that I love, you know, was the NHS sort of like aired their views. They said, what we did was released a tweet, sorry, I should say, a simple tweet of Weetabix with baked beans and a nice little shot of baked beans on top of Weetabix being served, you know, with a spoon and stuff like that, cereal bowl. The NHS came in with their tweet saying that tweet should come with a health warning. Tinder, their official account, said, trust us, this is not a match. I'm thinking about other ones that here. Xbox Rare Achievement Unlock. Greater Manchester Police. I love this one. They said we've been, BEN, looking into this after a number of complaints today. Due to its serious nature, we've passed this over to our major incident team who deal with serial killers. You see what they did there. Wimbledon's official Twitter account just put quiet, please, with their thing. Google, and this was great. Google did this with a picture alongside it of the front page of Google. You know, when you do the predictive search, it actually has Google, the search. If you search Weetabix, actually what came up that day was Weetabix and beans, because so many people were searching of it. Google UK said, look at what you've done. My favorite, however, I'm sorry, Pfizer came up with, haven't our scientists worked hard enough without having to come up with an antidote to this? My favorite one came at the end of the day, actually, when the State of Israel, the official Twitter account of the State of Israel, tweeted, finally something that all Middle Eastern countries can agree on. just no. And they suggest that, want to know how you can upgrade your Weetabix? Hummus was their line. So, you know, to have a campaign that then, you know, actually sorted out Middle East, peace in the Middle East, and solved that problem was really nice. And what was unbelievable, sorry, was the next day, because of that massive social media activity, literally massive social media activity, we had 600 brand pylons and 20,000 new followers of Weetabix on their social media feeds, literally billions upon billions of views. What happened the next day was that the breakfast shows, as you would expect, picked up on it. Piers Morgan, when he used to be on Good Morning Breakfast a few weeks ago, was on it, and he was sort of raving about the combination, actually trying it on air. Philip Schofield followed on Good Morning about an hour later. Lots of breakfast show DJs on the radio were trying it. The Chris Evans radio show was trying it. I'm sure other good radio stations were also included in sampling it. But it was going everywhere. All the newspapers wrote about it. And then the next day, unbelievably, which for me was the pinnacle of it all, really, and probably the pinnacle of my career, it got raised as a subject in the House of Commons in a debate by an MP who suggested that Weetabix and beans was an issue that was potentially even more divisive for the country than Brexit, and as such had to be debated, which was thoroughly endorsed by none other than Jacob Rees-Mogg, who then continued to talk about how much he disliked baked beans, but how much he loved Weetabix. I think he said, Weetabix are unbeatabix. And all these words were immortalised, obviously, in Hansard now for history classes in I just thought, history classes in a couple of hundred years time will be looking at this. Will it be a landmark moment in history or not, like Brexit was? But certainly it's immortalized there in the House of Commons as well. So for a PR campaign, which was a nugget of an idea in a brainstorm here at Frank, to then make it as a, you know, into the House of Commons chamber actively being debated, just I nearly fell off my seat, to be honest.
Well, the only thing I can think is missing in that case is just a bowl of Weetabix from this conversation. Gents, unbelievably enough, we are flat out of time. But if anyone would like any more information on Frank PR, Graham Goodkind, where do they go? What do they need to do?
We have a website, as you'd expect, welcometofrank.com, and we're pretty easy to find on all forms of social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, etc., etc. It's been fun, guys.
And one would assume that's how they contact you as well.
Yeah, exactly. I'm at Goodkind on Twitter, or go to the website and you'll find my contact details there as well.
If you want to contact me, you can go to my website, passionateaboutbusiness.co.uk, or gg@passionateaboutbusiness.co.uk. You can find me on Instagram under Nobby World, but not Twitter, because I only have 13 followers.
We've got to work on that anyway. But I've only knew a good PR company to help you. And if for whatever ridiculous reason...
there's some things which is like lost causes, which is clients that we sometimes don't take on.
Well, there. What more can you say? Speaking of lost cause, if you want to find me, you'll find me across social media at Mr. Phil Dave. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. So thank you very much indeed on behalf of Graham Godfrey and myself to our guest, Graham Goodkind.
Thank you for having me, Jed. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate About People. And seeing as we have two Grahams, it only seems right to end it as follows.
And it's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Hey!
Good night.